2. One morning, on the 7th or 8th day after Stepan Trofimovitch had consented to become engaged, about 11 o'clock, when I was hurrying as usual to my afflicted friend, I had an adventure on the way. I met Karamazinov, the great writer, as Liputin called him. I had read Karamazinov from a child. His novels and tales were well known to the past and even to the present generation. I revelled in them. They were the great enjoyment of my childhood and youth. Afterwards I grew rather less enthusiastic over his work. I did not care so much for the novels with a purpose which he had been writing of late as for his first early works, which were so full of spontaneous poetry, and his latest publications I had not liked at all. Speaking generally, if I may venture to express my opinion on so delicate a subject, all these talented gentlemen of the middling sort, who are sometimes in their lifetime accepted almost as geniuses, pass out of memory quite suddenly and without a trace when they die, and what's more, it often happens that even during their lifetime, as soon as a new generation grows up and takes the place of the one in which they have flourished, they are forgotten and neglected by everyone in an incredibly short time. This somehow happens among us quite suddenly, like the shifting of the scenes on the stage. Oh, it's not at all the same as with Pushkin, Gogol, Molière, Voltaire, all those great men who really had a new original word to say. It's true, too, that these talented gentlemen of the middling sort, in the decline of their venerable years, usually write themselves out in the most pitiful way, though they don't observe the fact themselves. It happens not infrequently that a writer who has been for a long time credited with extraordinary profundity and expected to exercise a great and serious influence on the progress of society betrays in the end such poverty, such insipidity in his fundamental ideas, that no one regrets that he succeeded in writing himself out so soon. But the old greybeards don't notice this, and are angry. Their vanity sometimes, especially towards the end of their career, reaches proportions that may well provoke wonder. God knows what they begin to take themselves for gods at least. People used to say about Karamazinov that his connections with aristocratic society and powerful personages were dearer to him than his own soul. People used to say that on meeting you he would be cordial, that he would fascinate and enchant you with his open-heartedness, especially if you were of use to him in some way, and if you came to him with some preliminary recommendation. But that before any stray prince, any stray countess, anyone that he was afraid of, he would regard it as his sacred duty to forget your existence with the most insulting carelessness, like a chip of wood, like a fly, before you had even time to get out of his sight. He seriously considered this the best and most aristocratic style. In spite of the best of breeding and perfect knowledge of good manners, he is, they say, vain to such an hysterical pitch that he cannot conceal his irritability as an author even in those circles of society where little interest is taken in literature. If anyone were to surprise him by being indifferent, he would be morbidly chagrined and try to revenge himself. A year before, I had read an article of his in a review, written with an immense affectation of naive poetry and psychology too. He described the wreck of some steamer on the English coast, of which he had been the witness, and how he had seen the drowning people saved, and the dead bodies brought ashore. All this rather long and verbose article was written solely with the object of self-display. One seemed to read between the lines, "Concentrate yourselves on me. Behold what I was like at those moments. What are the sea, the storm, the rocks, the splinters of wrecked ships to you? I have described all that sufficiently to you with my mighty pen. Why look at that drowned woman with the dead child in her arms? Look rather at me. See how I was unable to bear that sight and turned away from it. Here I stood with my back to it. Here I was horrified and could not bring myself to look. I blinked my eyes. Isn't that interesting? When I told Stepan Trofimovitch my opinion of Karamazinov's article, he quite agreed with me. When rumours had reached us of late that Karamazinov was coming to the neighbourhood, I was, of course, very eager to see him, and, if possible, to make his acquaintance. I knew that this might be done through Stepan Trofimovitch. They had once been friends. And now I suddenly met him at the crossroads. I knew him at once. He had been pointed out to me 2 or 3 days before, when he drove past with the governor's wife. He was a short, stiff-looking old man, though not over 55, with a rather red little face, with thick grey locks of hair clustering under his chimney-pot hat and curling round his clean little pink ears. His clean little face was not altogether handsome, with its thin, long, crafty-looking lips, with its rather fleshy nose, and its sharp, shrewd little eyes. He was dressed somewhat shabbily in a sort of cape, such as would be worn in Switzerland or North Italy at that time of year. But at any rate, all the minor details of his costume, the little studs and collar, the buttons, the tortoise-shell lorgnette on a narrow black ribbon, the signet ring, were all such as are worn by persons of the most irreproachable good form. I am certain that in summer he must have worn light prunella shoes with mother-of-pearl buttons at the side. When we met, he was standing still at the turning and looking about him attentively. Noticing that I was looking at him with interest, he asked me in a sugary, though rather shrill voice, "Allow me to ask, which is my nearest way to Bykovy Street?" "To Bykovy Street? Oh, that's here, close by," I cried in great excitement. "Straight on along this street, and the second turning to the left." "Very much obliged to you." A curse on that minute. I fancy I was shy and looked cringing. He instantly noticed all that, and, of course, realized it all at once. That is, realized that I knew who he was, that I had read him and revered him from a child, and that I was shy and looked at him cringingly. He smiled, nodded again, and walked on as I had directed him. I don't know why I turned back to follow him. I don't know why I ran the 10 paces beside him. He suddenly stood still again.
"And could you tell me where is the nearest cab stand?" he shouted out to me again.
It was a horrid shout, a horrid voice. "A cab stand? The nearest cab stand is by the cathedral. There are always cabs standing there." And I almost turned to run for a cab for him. I almost believe that that was what he expected me to do. Of course, I checked myself at once and stood still, but he had noticed my movement and was still watching me with the same horrid smile. Then something happened which I shall never forget. He suddenly dropped a tiny bag which he was holding in his left hand, though indeed it was not a bag, but rather a little box, or more probably some part of a pocketbook, or to be more accurate, a little reticule, rather like an old-fashioned lady's reticule, though I really don't know what it was. I only know that I flew to pick it up. I am convinced that I did not really pick it up, but my first motion was unmistakable. I could not conceal it, and like a fool I turned crimson. The cunning fellow at once got all that could be got out of the circumstance. "Don't trouble, I'll pick it up," he pronounced charmingly. That is, when he was quite sure that I was not going to pick up the reticule. He picked it up as though forestalling me, nodded once more, and went on his way, leaving me to look like a fool. It was as good as though I had picked it up myself. For 5 minutes, I considered myself utterly disgraced forever, but as I reached Stepan Trofimovitch's house, I suddenly burst out laughing. The meeting struck me as so amusing that I immediately resolved to entertain Stepan Trofimovitch with an account of it, and even to act the whole scene to him.